Skull, everybody. This is Alexander Ludwig, and you are listening to The Wild Hunt.
Welcome back, heathens and Christians, to The Wild Hunt, the No Ship Network podcast on the History Channel series Vikings. I am your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em.
If you like what you hear here, head on over to noship.net and check out all of the other stuff we do. We cover a bunch of other shows, and you can see all the ways that you can support us financially and otherwise. And please go to iTunes and leave us a review. We love them.
Yes, thanks for all of you who've been writing us reviews lately. They motivate us, and they help us get seen on iTunes.
Also, check out the TV Time app. It's a pretty cool thing you can do on your phone. It lets you know when TV shows are coming out. It gives you like a, what is it, an hour? Like an hour before it says?
Yeah, notification. Mm-hmm. And you can always access the app or go into the app and just get an idea of what the schedule is. It'll actually have dates next to the episodes so you can plan your life around your television shows.
It's really convenient, actually. And you're also part of a community of like-minded viewers. You follow people, they follow you. We're all on there so you can, you know, interact with us. Check it out.
All right, we are discussing Vikings Season 5, Episode 6, The Message. This was written by Michael Hurst and directed by Kieran Donnelly. Any thoughts?
Not my favorite episode of the season so far, but not a bad one, per se. And it got better with repeated viewings, and there's some good stuff to dig into. It feels like some neat things could potentially happen in the future from what I've seen in this episode.
Yeah, it was a setup episode for the next few. You know, we just got everybody kind of corralled in the right direction for, you know, the face-off. So it was interesting.
I guess I'm going to make a typical American comment and just complain about the time jump of Bjorn. Because I listened to an interview with Michael Hurst, and he said that it's just the Americans who have problems with the time jumps. Is it really just the Americans?
No, I don't think so. I think that there's a lot of fast movement that goes on, especially with Bjorn's storyline, and not a lot of clarification on what actually happened and how. Yeah. You know, it's just like snap, 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 boom, 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 go. Mm-hmm. And maybe they just didn't care to tell that. Maybe that's going to be saved for another time. But I feel like there's something missing. And that's kind of the part that I don't like about this episode. There's one or two other little things that I don't like. But that was the main thing that I had a problem with. I was just like, what is going on here? But I have a feeling that at the beginning of episode 7, it's going to come up real quick.
So before we get into the recap, we're going to start out with two hashtag no ships. We actually have quite a bit of hashtag no ships for this episode today. First up, we have James, and he says, Astrid finds out that being queen isn't that easy. Bjorn and company escape in a cloud of dust, and Ivar falls in love with the Bishop of Death. Hashtag no ship. Well, thanks for writing our recap. We're going to go ahead and read feedback now.
That's awesome. If anybody else wants to hashtag a recap, that's very convenient.
Bishop of Death. What do you guys think of Haman being called that? I mean, I think he wants to be a death deliverer, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. That'd be a sweet t-shirt.
Yeah, Bishop of Death.
Have his face all bloody on it, and it just says Bishop of Death in Old English font. Yeah, I would wear that.
It's black and white except for the blood on his face and his eyes.
Oh, yeah. Blue eyes. Nice. Red eyes.
Red eyes?
You said except for his eyes?
Yeah, blue eyes.
Oh, blue eyes. I thought you were saying red. Okay, I just got so jazzed about red eyes.
And our next hashtag no ship is by Michael Guy. And he said, this went real Game of Thrones real fast. Hashtag Vikings, hashtag no ship. I'm assuming you're talking about the gang rape.
That's what I think. That's the only thing that struck me as Game of Thronesy, because no one was getting their dick cut off. So, I mean, that's the only other thing. That's not the only two qualities that Game of Thrones brings to the table, but I can't think of anything else that would really apply.
I mean, other than them kind of focusing everybody on the royalty aspect of Kattegat, you know, like everybody's talking about it except for Bjorn. So that could have been it. You know, just kind of everybody's kind of focused in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there is a lot of talk about
the right to the throne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm with you guys. I think it's the gang rape that probably did it.
Yeah. Because that's.
See, now you've changed my mind. I think it's about the right to the throne.
Yeah, you're probably right. Because I'd rather not like even think about the gang rape anyway. Yeah. So.
Okay, so like we've been doing with our recaps, we're breaking it up either by location or character. I try to do a recap by character or by location, but there was some crossover, so I've got a mix here. So I'm going to start off with Bjorn. The cliffhanger of last episode is quickly resolved as Bjorn and Halfdan fight their way out of their predicament and into a sandstorm. The scene ends with Bjorn, Halfdan, and Sinric and on camelback racing ahead of the sandstorm. And then the last time we see Bjorn, he's on his boats. They have made it to Scandinavia, and we know this because of the fjords. That's all of Bjorn in this episode, so I figure we can just talk it all as one big chunk.
Well, I just want to know how the hell they got out of the desert. Like, I understand they can get out, you know, they can, does the Viking crystal method work when it's just sun all the time? You know, it's amazing that they got out of the desert. I mean, those guys are definitely, you know, masters of maybe the stars or, but see, it would be different stars in that part of the world. So I don't know. I don't know. It's crazy.
You can't, well, yeah, I guess like once they're on the other side of the sandstorm and they're able to see the sky, to see the stars and navigate out mm-hmm. is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the only way I could think.
Well, I mean, how do they have the wherewithal to find the camels within that? I mean, it's completely obscuring their vision. I mean, what we saw of it is, I mean, are they that well acquainted with where everything is? Did they already have their headgear kind of like wrapped around their neck and they were just able to pull it over their heads? I don't know.
No, they were in like the clothes that they wore the night before when they were about to get executed.
Yeah.
They were like almost in shrifts or whatever you call them and stuff like that. So what I think happened is she, you know, Cassia says, kill him. They see the storm coming and then Bjorn does the very first dick pic ever. And he literally takes that pick and just gets that guy right in the spot. And then, so, you know, they make easy work out of these guards and then they say, run for it. And so I'm assuming they ran into the nearest shelter, beat up whoever was in there, took their clothes, waited for the storm to pass, grabbed the camels and said, let's get out of Dodge. Yeah. They knew all they have to really know is which direction to go to get back to the boats.
But you actually see the storm right behind them. You know, they actually exit the storm.
Yeah. 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 They didn't wait because that's their cover to get out. You know, it's like, okay. So it's like they got to the camels. So maybe they get to the tent, steal the clothes, wrap themselves up, and then just go out in and roll a dice like that way.
We were cheated. I would have loved to see them like find their way to the tent. You know, Halfdan and Bjorn screaming like girls or something, you know, on their way there. And, you know, I don't know. It just would have been funny.
Yeah, or just them in the desert for like a 5-minute period going, are we going in the right direction? Or because they wouldn't have had any provisions either. So they had no water, no food, no nothing.
Yeah, we're meant to take for granted that Sinric really knows his way around the entire world, like every square inch.
I forgot about old Sinric. I'll give him that one too.
Well, I think it's stretched, though, to... Mm-hmm.
It's a good point, but it is a stretch.
For sure.
Because Sinric would be the one that gets them back. But, you know, a couple episodes ago, or however long ago it was when they got there, you had two separate scenes showing you how long it took to get from wherever they, you know, were at on the boats, the shore, to where Ziadat Allah had his camp.
Right.
So, you know, then you're just going to run these camels till they die. And then walk the rest of the way. But however they did it, they did it. I'm thinking this, like when you get the Blu-ray set for season 5, this is going to be an hour and a half episode. And there's like a whole missing 30 minutes of, you know, maybe there's even like a deleted Three Stooges scene in there when they're all trying to figure out which way to go. You know what I mean? They start smacking each other on the head and stuff. I don't know.
Well, but us Americans are the only ones that get the edited version like aired over here. That's why we have a problem with time jumps.
You know,
somebody's butt probably appeared.
Yeah.
And we can't see it because somebody's butt was on screen.
Plus, I mean, what about this villain? That storm must have lasted forever because you figure he would have been able to round his men up and chase them down. It's their land.
Wouldn't they know better than Bjorn and Sinric and Halfdan how to get through that storm?
Yeah, they should have chased them down. Maybe they released all the horses and camels but those three so they had no way to hunt them down. I don't know.
Maybe.
We're just kind of hoping, right?
Yeah. We're hoping there's a plausible explanation for that because otherwise, you know, because we talked about this like whenever at the beginning of the series, whenever the Vikings would go to England, there was such a big deal made of it. You know, how long it took. And, you know, we had discussions about how they would use the restroom on the boats, crapping over the side and all that stuff going back years and years ago. So then they started speeding it up. Now it's just like at like warp speed. You know, it's just like, oh, now they're here. Now they're there. It's faster than it's ever been. And it doesn't bother you except when they're in a predicament that they have to get out of. And it's just very
Convenient.
It's very convenient. Yeah, yeah. We'll leave it at that.
All right, so next we're going to discuss England. Aethelwulf and company are back at King Ecgbert's stronghold. Aethelred is annoyed that they are there and fears that the Vikings will come. He says they should leave. Aethelwulf refuses to run anymore. Aethelred voices his frustration and wonders about Aethelwulf's decision aloud. Alfred says it is because Aethelwulf is king. And I think his statement works on two levels. Aethelwulf is king, and it is his duty to lead his countrymen towards victory. Running isn't the answer, especially if you want to reassure your countrymen. It also serves as a cold glass of shut the hell up for Aethelred. He's king, so shut your mouth.
Is Aethelred the Fitzurk of this group?
Yes.
I don't know. Technically, by the fact that he is older, yeah.
Yeah, but he's like, you know, kind of not really the one who's going to be in succession, even though, you know.
He is historically.
Oh, he is?
Mm-hmm.
So both of them?
Yeah, for a little while.
Okay, so both of them actually get to be king at mm-hmm. some point.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
I mean, there was other brothers, too.
Oh.
Yeah, they really truncated this lineage.
So this could also contribute to the whole Game of Thrones thing, because it's all about who's going to be king.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, on either side of the... You know, well, the divide.
When he was talking about going back to the swamp, it made me laugh. It's like, oh, let's go back to the swamp. It's like, what are you fucking stupid? They're gone, dude. We're cool. Go suck your thumb somewhere. There's no need to go back to a disgusting swamp. We're okay.
Yeah. Do we all want to catch pneumonia and die? Is that, yeah. I mean.
I didn't even know England had swamps. So I was shocked in that one, too. It's like, oh, they've got swamps? I didn't know that. You never see it. I always think of green, lush land when I think of...
Well, they have fens.
Mm, okay.
I think those are kind of like their analogous things to swamps.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, don't fairy lights exist in bogs? Anyway.
That's where you find the little folk.
Exactly. That must have been where Haman had his sword made when he paid the dwarves. Well, they live in mines. Caves. All right, so Alfred visits Ecgbert's resting place so he can talk to his grandfather. He tells Ecgbert of their defeat and desolation. He frets over losing Ecgbert's legacy. Alfred promises if he is ever made king, he will restore Ecgbert's dream. I thought that this scene was really sentimental with its lighting, its editing choices, and its close-ups. The Brits really love Alfred the Great.
I felt like... I liked it. Somebody needs to fix the roof there.
I know.
Because there's just no, you know, I mean, it's been abandoned. I get it, you know, but it's just leaking down and everything. But it was kind of a cool touch to see that, though, because it lets you know that, you know, it kind of gives you a reminder that things have to be kept up, especially back then. It's not like a structure is just going to stand soundly mm-hmm. for years without anybody tending to it. I also think, like, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, kids look up to their grandparents and never really think anything negative about them, unless they're maybe raised by them or something like that. You know what I mean? I've known friends who've been raised by grandparents who they think of them just like their parents, and you always think negative things about your parents to a certain extent. But, like, I was thinking, you know, Alfred could have added on to that, said, you know, I'm going to restore England to the glory that you thought it was going to be, and, you know, I know that you were just a lecherous old drunk for the last, you know, 15 to 20 years of your life, but I'm gonna do right by you, by golly.
It was a classic scene too. You get this in a lot of, like, older movies where they're swearing, they're, you know, it starts off with a prayer, then they swear by their lineage that they're gonna make things right, you know, like the old Robin Hood had it with Kevin Costner. So it was a very kind of classic scene to fit with the time period, you know. I enjoyed it. It's the first thing I thought of were some of those old movies.
I guess it gives you that that sense of it being sacred, that this is mm-hmm. A pact or a promise to believe in.
Yeah, it shows you where his heart lies. When his half-brother is goofing off and training with the sword, he's, in this whole episode, you see where Alfred's, like, focusing on the bigger picture. So it's really cool.
And it's a nice linkage, too, because everybody knows, you know, not everybody, but we have an idea of what Alfred the Great went on to mm-hmm. do, and with the unification and all that. But, like, you know, here he is at the beginning. This is where it began. This is where mm-hmm. he really got on the road to that. So
just to tie this up, later Judith discovers Alfred packing for a pilgrimage to Lindisfarne. He needs to find out who his biological father really was and where he came from. Meanwhile, out in the yard, Aethelwulf observes and coaches Aethelred's battle training. And he says to Aethelred, "You have the makings of a great warrior and a great king." We have a hashtag notion from Jasmine Nightbloom. She says, hashtag Aethelred, the neglected, finally gets some scene time, and he wants to go back to the swamp Time to step up, baby wolf. Stop letting little brother Alfred steal all the attention and glory. Hashtag no ship, hashtag Vikings.
Bitzerk. Yeah, I agree with her. The scene between Alfred and his mom was like a reverse birds and the bees speech.
It was.
You know what I mean? Like, he's telling her how this all happened. Like, this is how I got here, mom. You banged this guy, and then you got pregnant, and you had me. And now I'm going to go see what he was all about. You know, like, he's telling her out. She's just like.
It wasn't something that just happened.
Right. You know, and it's a good point to bring up.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of wish that they had aged her just a little bit, because he's starting to kind of catch up to her in age, and they kind of look like they should almost be dating. You know, it's like.
Not aging any of the women.
No, just a little bit. Just a little gray, maybe, you know, something. Anything. Just something to kind of show, okay, some time has passed, because everybody else seems to be aging. Like, in the men, it's like, just do the same thing to them, because it's super distracting.
Yeah, they don't have Clairol or L'Oreal. Yeah, right? Like that.
It's like, who?
There's no crow's feet. There's no. Like you said, gray hair, nothing. And it does. I thought the same thing, too, because it actually crossed my mind. It'd be like, wouldn't it be funny if these two were actually dating in real life?
Yeah.
You know, because they met on set and everything, because there's the age difference between the actors is probably not very significant, at least when you put it in comparison with, you know, the age difference that they're supposed to have as characters.
Yeah. And they've done such a good job with the men with the age makeups, like Bjorn and Floki and all these other people, even Ragnar when he was alive. It's like, just use some of that talent and just give it just a subtle. It doesn't have to be a ton, but show some, because it kind of takes away from the story a little bit when you're looking at them. And it's like, man, they just don't age. They're going to start making out here in a minute, you know?
Hey, what does it take for showrunners and executives of television networks and channels to believe that we can handle women aging?
I don't know.
Us as viewers.
You know, I don't know if it's an issue of them believing or not believing that their audience can handle something. I think they're worried about the advertisers. You know, if they were to sell, if they only made these shows and sold them to us on DVD and they knew that everybody who was watching it was going to buy a DVD set, I think things would be done significantly differently.
So if it was on Netflix, it would be different, you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I think they would, because if anything, and this has been commented on this whole season, these women are getting more and more glamorous looking, regardless of the shittiness of their situation, regardless of their age that keeps getting older and older, and they're looking like supermodels. You know, the scene where you have later on where Astrid is remembering Lagertha. I mean, it's such a like historical looking scene. It looks like, you know, it could just have happened in 2017.
Are you talking about Lagertha?
Yeah.
You actually see her nails, and they try to make it look natural, but she's got nail polish on.
Yeah, I noticed that. I noticed that her nails look very healthy and shiny.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's something to be said about that. So I feel like that's a good point to bring up if they were doing this. But I just don't think that it's a lack of faith in the audience's tolerance for that kind of thing. I think it's
advertisers.
It's a monetary concern, I think.
All right, so next we're heading to Crapagat, and just want to remind everybody that Crapagat was coined by our listener Rich Stack on a hashtag no ship a couple episodes ago. And the first time we see Astrid and Harald, they are chasing each other through the woods playfully. A horn blows, announcing an arrival from the sea, halting Astrid and Harald's almost lovemaking.
This is a Viking mating ritual. They chase each other around in the forest.
It was kind of sexy.
Yeah.
But I thought she was going to try to kill him, though.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to see Wicket spying on him from over it.
Nub, nub.
Nubba, nubba, nubba.
They catch a glimpse of Ivar's boats. Harald recognizes him immediately. We have a hashtag no ship. Rich Stack says, sexy as fuck, Astrid in the forest with Harald. Joan Jett's best acting since Light of Day, hashtag no ship. I had to look up Light of Day, and Joan Jett, the actual Joan Jett, was in a movie with Michael J. Fox.
I didn't know that.
That's good. Very
I didn't
nice.
Either. Never seen it.
That's a good pull. So it's the real Joan Jett. Nice.
I think they're both musicians, and the cover, it's like they're both sharing a microphone and singing into it together.
Oh, I got to watch it now. It's called The Light of Day.
Light of Day.
I got to see it.
I've definitely never seen it, but for some reason that sounds familiar, but I don't know if I'm just thinking of Michael J. Fox singing in Back to the Future.
That could
be. Like, yeah, that's probably what it is. That image is just jumping in my head.
Yeah.
Johnny Be Good.
Johnny Be Good, Earth Angel. Yeah. He sang a bunch of them.
Now in Harald's Great Hall, Harold wants to know from Ivar why they have come there instead of Kattegat. Ivar speaks of his falling out with Ube as being his reasoning. Harold says it was a good choice and then directs Ivar's attention to Queen Astrid. Ivar congratulates the couple, and Astrid, unconvinced, thanks him in return. They eye each other with contempt. Harold wants to know if he will have their support when he strikes Kattegat. Vitserk blurts out, only if Ivar is made king. Harold states that he has made his desire quite plain to be king of all of Norway. Ivar essentially says, not to worry, because Kattegat certainly wouldn't be in Ivar's rule for long due to the likelihood of his own early death. When Harold asks what about Vitserk, Ivar cuts him off, saying all they care about is taking Kattegat away from Lagertha, the murderous bitch that killed their mother. Astrid eyes Ivar pointedly here. We have a hashtag no ship. Rich Stack says, Ivar is more honest with Haemon than Vitserk, and when Vitserk told Harold that Ivar needed to be king, Ivar gave him the "you're as stupid as that stupid mustache" look. Hashtag no ship.
You're as stupid as the stupid mustache?
Yep. He does have a stupid mustache.
Yes,
I don't
does.
Even know why he bothers.
I don't know.
I guess it's probably hard to shave back then. I mean, he probably has to take like 2 stones and like tweeze them out.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want to do that either.
Well, they have knives. You know, they could be old school and just kind of like shave with a sharp knife. It'd be dangerous as hell, but.
Have a lot of like cuts all over his face.
Yes.
I mean, that would look better.
He just has little dabs of toilet paper, which didn't exist back then, but
right.
You know. What? Well, I guess, you know, he's trying to grow out the peach fuzz and look like a man. You know what I mean? He's a Lothbrok brother, you know? He wants to play the part. He's just not there yet.
Hmm.
I don't know. But it's just so saying the wrong shit at the wrong time. That was a great scene, the acting of it, because he's like, when Ivar gestures over at Vitserk, you know what I mean? You know, he wants to say, this idiot fuck over here who just blurted out the real plan, you know, what he meant, my dear brother, what he meant to say was.
It made me think of Ragnar's train. That last trip with Ragnar that he took really taught him a lot, because he used kind of like that same plan of, look, you know, I'm a cripple. He kind of, in this episode, he reminds people quite a bit. Look, I'm a cripple. What am I going to do? You know, he keeps forcing that into the forefront when they should be going, well, you've already kind of conquered England and came back and you're pretty formidable. So that shouldn't even be a question. But you're right. It is funny when he slips, but he recovers so quickly, you know. I think Astrid was the only one that didn't believe him.
Because you're referring to when Ragnar said, you know, people will underestimate you because you're a cripple.
Exactly. So he uses that weapon to his advantage. And then you see, I mean, we've been seeing, in this episode, he reminded me of his dad the most, with the priest, bringing the priest along, because he sees how great of a strategist he was and how great of a weapon he can be. The way that he's handling, you know, everybody around him is very strategic and smart, just like his dad would do, you know, kind of like use people to their strengths. And then to pull out the cripple card when the guy was crawling the last time you saw him, and now he's legitimately walking with these braces he's invented in a crutch. And it was really cool to see Ivar's, he just reminded me of Ragnar this episode. He really did.
It's good to see him develop and use that cunning, like a little bit more than just his physical prowess, or, you know, crush, kill, destroy kind of thing, which he can't do that in this situation anyway, because he's trying to elicit somebody's help, somebody who's he's on the same side with ideologically anyway. They both want the same prize, but he has to pretend, you know, that he doesn't want it. But it kind of makes him overstate the case for that just a little bit, because, you know, but that's Fitzerk's fault, because he has to make up for it, because he's just like, I'm a cripple, I'm not healthy, how long am I going to live? And this guy's burning with ambition. You know what I mean? Out of everybody there, you don't think of him as being, he is crippled, yes, but he's not a weakling that's going to get trampled over. This guy is going to be going places and doing things. He knows it. Everyone around him knows it. And it sucks that he was forced to, because of his brother's stupidity, have to go to that length to make himself sound like it. Like, because it was kind of unconvincing. How long am I going to live? Yeah, probably a long time.
You know? I don't think Harold's convinced at all.
No. But it's a smart play, other than stumbling around and losing any control that he might have gotten if he hadn't blurted it out, though. He kind of still wrangles everything into a certain direction.
I did find Ivar really appealing this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been, I guess it's probably been since that episode where he and Ragnar were trekking England together.
Really? It's been that long since you've been?
Yeah, because most of the time he's one note.
Yeah, he was playing a variety of notes. It was some highs, some lows, some in-betweens.
So King Harald knows that they have a prisoner with them and would like to see him. Ivar has his men bring in the Christian and introduces Bishop Hammond. Hammond is thrown to the ground before Harald. However, he recovers his composure by staring defiantly and straightening his posture and clothing. King Harald wonders why they don't just kill Hammond. Ivar says it is because he is a great warrior and he admires great warriors. King Harald asks if Hammond will fight for them. Ivar says maybe, if he doesn't want to get crucified. This brings laughter. Hammond begins to pray to his god. Harald says a fat lot of good that will do him. They all begin to laugh again. Hammond smiles like he knows a secret. Which was the only way I could describe that smile. I don't know if that's accurate.
Yeah, he might. I didn't take it that way. I took it as he's just so convinced in his faith something is going to turn out right for him some way, shape, or form. God's not going to abandon him to this in this heathen land and let him
die. It's definitely a knowing smile of some sort. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Confidence.
Yeah, I mean, he's a priest. He's got super faith, you know? You know, a lot of people who are that far into a religion that they're clerical, you know, it's an unwielding faith, so... Yeah, he truly believes that he's there probably now for a reason and that God will deliver him out of it. You know, that's that smile of, okay, you guys are heathens. Of course you don't believe me, but I'm going to be okay.
It's an enviable thing to have that kind of confidence. I don't have it, you know, from my personal particular spiritual point of view doesn't include that kind of like rock solid belief in things happening one way or another. And so to have that, it seems like it would be such an asset to just know, like, well, you know, it's out of my hands, but I know the right thing is going to happen. And just to have that kind of faith, because it seems like it would be able to, that's what's so attractive about faith, I suppose.
So we've actually discussed like his vanity, and his vanity, I think, comes from where he believes that he is a weapon of God. Mm-hmm. But what if, in a way, he's right? Like, there's never ever been like a definitive account of there actually being any sort of like Christian presence or intervention or even Norse presence or intervention. We have to just assume we're seeing things through Floki's eyes or Athelstan's eyes, and that's why these images or scenes are happening. But even though it seems supernatural, what if we see something like that with him? Which I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
That's a good point to bring up, though. Like, what if
Ivar's fucking up bringing him there?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about the historically, I don't know when Christianity came to Scandinavia. I don't know if this was interlinked with the Crusades or how it got there. I'm ignorant of that. But
it's interlinked with the Viking conquest.
Okay. So, but it's coming later. But so you're saying this could be like the seeds of it.
Well, yeah, if you think about it, unlike Athelstan, this guy's a warrior, which is what these people really hold above all, is their prowess of fighting and the strength you can do. So now they're going to see a different Christian priest than Athelstan, who fought for a little while and then kind of threw it all away to be that humble monk. This is a fighting cleric. You know, they could bring a few people to Christianity if they see him go into Kattegat and just go off and help them win the battle. It could draw followers to him to where maybe he starts preaching.
He could potentially convert.
Yeah, for sure. Because he's a badass. We know that.
He could potentially convert people? Yeah. Or he could have...
Vikings.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. Because I was thinking that it would be the other way around, but it's probably not the case because I was thinking
that's what happened to Athelstan.
Mm-hmm. He would be... Yeah, that's true.
So
they don't want to retread that.
Yeah, and then he got rid of his armband and then gave up all the trappings of Vikingdom and kind of started looking like Jesus a little bit and went back to the monk, you know, I'm not going to fight or draw blood or hurt and harm. Now you're going to see him praying on the battlefield to his god, and then maybe him be successful, and maybe Harald does the same thing, and he's not as successful, you know, so it could draw people towards that direction. Because even at the end, Lagertha is talking about how this could tear our world apart. He could be the catalyst to do it just on the fact of how good he does on the battlefield.
Exactly, and he could actually convert Harald.
Or Ube, or who knows? Who knows? I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But it
won't be Ivar.
No, we're definitely not getting a Christian Ivar.
Nah, that'd be great just to have a scene of him fighting, and they play a Soundgarden song, "Jesus Christ Pose," in the background. Jesus Christ Pose. You know, because the Vikings are a pretty pragmatic people in a lot of ways, to where whatever actually works is what they're going to try to do. They go to new lands, they try new things, yeah. get new farmlands, whatever. So if this guy shows them that something else besides what they already believe in could possibly be more effective, there could definitely be some converts to it.
Mm-hmm.
We shall see.
I mean, especially, you know, we've got Floki's situation too, where he could be failing his people there.
Yeah,
that looks pretty dire. But more on that later. So later, Ivar is walking the bloody, muddy roads of Krapagat. Harald notices Ivar and opts to remain inconspicuous at first while peering out at Ivar with curiosity. Ivar has a sword in hand, and he tests the sharpness of the blade's edge on a significantly sized marine creature. I wasn't sure what it was. I was like, is that a tuna? Is that a small whale? Is that a shark? I don't know. I didn't bother to look it up, so I'm sorry.
It looked kind of like a shark or a small whale, I think, but we could be totally wrong.
I think it's a small, like a shark, a medium-sized shark, mm-hmm. because you see shark teeth, like jaws, in several right. different scenes in the background. You see them behind Ivar at one point. Mm-hmm. You see them behind Astrid at one point, and I think you see them behind Harald at one point. So I think it's some breed of shark.
And shark hide would be tougher, so for him to cut through that would be pretty amazing.
It's a badass sword.
Oh, yeah.
So King Harald says, that's a fine sword.
But he says it like, that's a fine sword.
That's a fine sword.
I recommend repeat listening into that because it's really funny.
Yeah, if you keep
rewinding it,
it becomes musical. The more you hear it, it sounds like he's singing a song when he does it.
So, as Steve described, Harald is drawn out and compliments the weapon. Ivar says the blade is magical and that it belongs to the bishop. Haman must have paid the dwarves a great deal to make it. He says the metal is stronger than what they are used to and that it seems to never lose its sharpness despite repeated use. Harald remarks that it will give Ivar great advantage. He says, think of Odin's spear. And Ivar says, now think of Ivar's sword. They begin to walk. Harald wants to know what Ivar really wants. Ivar wants revenge against Lagertha. Harald wants to know about Kattegat specifically. Ivar is not interested in Kattegat and wants to know what it is about kingship that causes otherwise reasonable people to act like idiots. He then asks Harald about his marriage to Astrid and wonders if it is worth it.
That's a good point, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lagertha is going to be a formidable opponent on the best of days, but now you have married her lover under duress and, you know, made her do this kind of thing. So it's she's going to be you're just going to put that much spite and venom into her fight against you. So it won't just be survival. It'll be like revenge at the same time. So that maybe wasn't the best idea, but, you know, we'll see.
It's also the frog giving the scorpion a ride on its back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true, too.
And he probably realizes he's going to double cross her. You know, I mean, it's double cross him. You know, it's where does her loyalty lie? Ivar's a really good strategist. We've seen it. He probably realizes that in a lot of ways it was just terrible. It was a terrible move.
Harald's terrible at courting women.
His game consists of Stockholming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to keep you around me until you get to the point where you like me, then you love me, and then we have sexy time and everything will be okay. And you'll get pregnant and give me sons, and then that'll be the bond between us that holds us together.
Him and Rolo kind of compete for crappiest boyfriend.
Yeah.
Stalking and kidnapping.
Mm-hmm. Raping.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen both of those guys rape people. So it's and, you know, this sword, you know, being like apparently forged by dwarves and stuff like that. I felt like Ivar was going to just like put it right up to Harald's chin and be like, this is Sting. You've seen it before.
I like Ivar's statement about people acting like idiots about kingship. It sort of reduces the desire to be king into mundanity. Certainly there are more interesting things to strive for than just being at the pinnacle of power is what I think he's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's another way to wave the suspect away from him. Like, nah, you know, I don't want it. Y'all are stupid for wanting it.
Yeah.
Of course
I don't know if he
it.
Really does, though. You think he does? I think he is really about the fame. It's well, just a step to get him there.
Yeah.
It's six one, half dozen the other. If being king. All right. I will say this. I agree with you that he doesn't want to be king as a intrinsic valued thing. I think it has extrinsic value. It's utility. If he can be king and that's going to make him more famous, which it obviously would, that's a stepping stone that he wants to do. But you know what I mean? He'd just as soon be emperor, though. You know what
exactly.
I mean? It's like whatever's going to make him more famous. So he's not interested in being a king for the sake of it. And I think he is somewhat disdainful. It is a diversionary tactic, but I think he's also disdainful of everybody's focus on that because he puts the premium on name recognition and being known and being more famous than his father and stuff like that. So, which we learn later. So I think that he really does feel like, God, cut it out already with the king bullshit.
Yeah. You've like, asked a couple of times.
Yeah. I think he sees it as a way of supplying what he needs to get what he really wants, which is fame. Mm-hmm. He needs that home base because Fitzerk made that argument to him last episode. You need to go, you know, maintain Kattegat so you can have your supplies so you continue to do what you're doing here in England.
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, he does want revenge against Lagertha.
Yeah, you know, and so it's all about, for Ivar, it's all about fame. He wants to live forever. He wants to learn how to fly.
Fly!
I also think it's funny that Ivar assumes Haemon paid dwarves for the sword. Like, he says it with seriousness.
Well, don't the Vikings believe that dwarves made all the, yes, like, God's weapons? So it's pretty, yeah, it's funny that he definitely thinks that. Like, they couldn't have just come up with it on their own.
Yeah, he assumes that Christians, you know, believe the same, and assuming it's enough for him. Like, he has zero lack of interest in Christianity. Mm. Like, zero.
Yeah, well, he has, yeah, there's nothing there, yeah.
So Ivar sits in Haemon's prison cell. He talks to Haemon of the upcoming war against Lagertha, the war between brothers. Ivar demands that Haemon fight alongside him or die. He tells Haemon that he is not asking him to renounce his faith, only to kill those that he calls heathens. Haemon wants to know why. Ivar tells him that he is jealous of Haemon, and therefore he wants to be like Haemon, strong, whole, a great warrior. This is why he has preserved Haemon. There's been comparisons made. For obvious reasons, we've got the bromance between Ivar and Haemon here, mm-hmm, brewing, which we had before with Ragnar and Athelstan. And I think the difference here is we got Haemon versus Athelstan, which is, in other words, fame versus knowledge. There's the fame of Haemon and his prowess is what appeals to Ivar, where with Ragnar, it was knowledge. You had a monk who had all these scrolls and who could speak his language,
yeah,
where the other monks couldn't, you know, that was, mm-hmm, the, I think, the most surprising at first to Ragnar when he first met Athelstan, and that's why he took him with him.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that Ivar is being completely sincere about saying that he envies him?
I do. And I don't, you know if it's, if I'm right about that. I almost wonder if it's a parallel. That's going to talk more about it when we get to Margrett, because I think there's jealousy. Everybody has jealousy, and how you handle that jealousy is what makes you your character. You're always going to be jealous or envious of somebody. It's obviously something you see lacking in yourself. So what you should do is emulate that thing about that person.
Yeah.
Instead of just be a bitch and just talk shit.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, you know? Well, they people say that that's like one of the actual habits of successful people. They talk about, like, if you see somebody who drives a great car and is all this other, don't, basically in the common parlance of today, it would be, don't be a hater. Just see what that person's doing and then say, well, okay, if I like what they have, I need to emulate their behavior to get to that. I do, Paul, do you think that he's being sincere when he says that stuff to him?
I think some of it's sincere and some of it is Ivar being smart enough to tell this guy what he wants to hear to get him to fight for him, because he sees him as a weapon. He literally went to England and stole their best warrior, and it's trying to get him to fight for him. But I do think some of it was truthful in the fact that I wish I could stand and be as good as a fighter, but unfortunately I'm limited because of my legs. But not as much as he put into it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to give you a little bit of truth because I think you can tell. And I also want you to fight for me and be like, a fantastic aid in this upcoming war.
Yeah, I agree. I think he is sincere, but it's a twofer. He's, mm-hmm, he gets to be honest, then just lays it on a little bit thicker,
yeah,
to pull, you know, on the vanity strings of the bishop. And so, you know what I mean? So it's like, cause I think he knows enough about manipulation to know that if you're trying to manipulate somebody, but you use the truth with something that you honestly believe, it's way more effective than if he, like, hated this guy's guts but was, mm-hmm, like, oh, I envy you, you know, it wouldn't come off, you know. Yeah. But he honestly does, and he puts that little, like, almost breaking down in there, you know, to where he's like, to be whole, you know, like he wants to, mm-hmm, he wants to do all the things he could do. So
I also wonder if, like, Fitzerk gave him the idea, because, you know, Fitzerk was like, I'm nobody's dog, and then I think maybe he started going, you know, it'd be good to have a dog, an attack dog. And, like, now he's got Haemon.
Right.
Because Fitzerk, you're a shitty dog.
Well, they, like, walk around like Master Blaster from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. You know, like Ivar's on his shoulders.
Oh my goodness.
We have a hashtag no shit from Christian Callahan, and he says, Ivar, I'm jealous of you because you have sex with many women. Hashtag no shit. So maybe that's really what it's all about.
Could be too.
Maybe, but how would Ivar know that? He's only seen him fight. He hasn't seen him.
I know. They've actually pulled back. I was expecting to see him bumping and grinding all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'm relieved.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough, you know, I know we're censors. Paul and I are censors. Oh, yeah. But there's enough sex in the show to go around. So, especially of the unwilling variety in this episode. So, we don't need the bishop pulling his weight in that area, really. But, I don't know that Ivar even thinks of it like that. He might be alluding to the fact that when he says whole, meaning that, yeah, he can be intimate with a woman. But also fight on his own two legs. But I think that's probably more it than the other one.
Next scene, Fitzurk confronts Ivar about the rule of Kattegat, specifically about Fitzurk's claim that has gone unmentioned before King Harald. Ivar says this is all talk just to get them what they need for now. Besides, things can change in an instant. Fitzurk is doubtful and wonders if he even knows his brother. He asks Ivar what he really wants. Ivar wants to be greater than Ragnar. No one will ever forget Ivar the Boneless. And this is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we still remember Ragnar, though, so that's not necessary. But that's Hurst's fault, you know, not fault.
Well,
but,
no, I mean, he's been actually in other literature and movies, I believe, so.
All right, well, okay, let's say this. If this show never existed, whose name would you be more likely to come across randomly?
Probably Ivar, the Boneless.
Yeah, so I guess he's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I laughed Heyman. I laughed when he said, when he was like, oh, you know, when he brings up, well, you didn't tell him I'm next, you know, and it's like, oh, you're fucking stupid, man.
Come on.
Yeah. No wonder he didn't take you instead of fucking Ivar to England. Dad was right. You should have just smacked him down. Dad was right. You're dumb as fuck.
She just passed him a red shirt. Here you go. Sure.
I'm telling you.
You want to be marked, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you whatever I need to tell you to keep you around and to keep you shutting up. You know, you are the dog that you think you're not, but yes. I'm petting you enough to make you feel like you're not. You know, it's just, poor Fitzurk.
Next scene, we have a scene with Haman. He's beseeching his lord to deliver him out of the hands of the wicked. His lord is his only hope.
He does a great job in that scene because he has that, like, almost like that crying, whining thing to his voice when he goes down on his knees. And he's like, please, you know, like, get me out of here. But
spitting like crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot. You can see that in that light in the scene that there's a lot of saliva being jettisoned out when he, like, they came up and before they hit action on that scene, they, like, sprayed his lips down so he would have a bunch of water on him. It's a cool effect, though. I mean, unless Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is actually just getting a bunch of saliva up.
He's got a healthy saliva production going.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of praying in this episode, Christian praying. You know, if you consider the scene we saw earlier, and they're both similar. They're both praying in not your common places that you would pray. You know, it's very dirty, and they're really pouring their souls and hearts into it. So it could be, you know, a little bit of a little foretelling.
It's the eclipse.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the what?
The eclipse.
Eclipse.
And now the pendulum is swinging the other way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Even in Viking land.
Great.
So now in Harald's hall, they feast. Fitzurk makes a toast about smiting Lagertha and her rule in Kattegat. Ivar and Harald decide they will attack Kattegat in 2 moons' time. Astrid appears amenable to all of this talk. Harald makes a toast of his own by announcing that if any man breaks, he will deserve to die. This seems to be a warning crafted just for Ivar. I wanted to ask you guys if you got that feeling. I feel like it was quite obvious.
Yeah.
I feel like your answers are yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Why? And I just want to put out, like, was this retaliation regarding the comments about Astrid? Or maybe it's more about Ivar's endeavors towards fame?
I think he wants it to be known that this is the plan going forward. I am going to take control of Kattegat. Or it's unclear to me, actually, who is going to be in control of Kattegat. Because even Ivar says, I'm only going to rule it for a little while, and then I'm going to die because I'm an unhealthy cripple, yada, yada, yada. So does he expect to be in control of Kattegat after they take it and, you know, dethrone Lagertha? Or
yeah, well, maybe he's like, yeah, you're an unhealthy cripple. I'm going to make sure you're broken in front of everybody, like truly broken, dead, and then I'm going to take it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's doing this because he wants everybody around him to kind of witness him agreeing to the plan. It's a strategic move. It's like, okay, if I get him to say this is the plan in front of everybody, then there's no, that's not the plan. This is the plan, you know? So it's kind of like a ceiling pact of, okay, your men are here, my men are here. And, you know, King Harold throws great parties. Everybody seems to always be having fun. And, you know, true. It's kind of a way he does. Out of all the Vikings so far, I think I'd party with Harold, you know? Ragnar was always creeping off in the corner watching. It would be annoying.
Petting goats and stuff. Yeah, what? So I see what you're saying. The point you're making is doing it in front of everybody seals the deal. So this is like Tommy Boy getting Bob Zielinski to sign the brake pad order.
Yes. On television.
On television.
Yes.
To make sure it had to happen because you can't back away from that. So it's a smart move. Smart move.
Astrid makes her next move by trying to obtain messenger service. She strikes up a conversation with a man named Hakon while looking conspicuous on the docks. Eventually, Astrid gets to the point and tells him she wants him to deliver a message to Kattegat. Because it is dangerous, he wants her to make it worth his while. He wants more than just treasure. He wants to sleep with her. And I just want to know from you guys, was there no other way for her to get this message to Kattegat? I mean, couldn't she at least have dressed like some other person other than the queen? I mean, can you really identify her up close if you're just a regular Joe?
It's ridiculous that she went this route. I think there she could have, she had 2 months to kind of feel her way through, maybe get a servant, really find someone she can trust. It's a ballsy move, but this is, I think, why Lagertha was always kind of like strict with her and trying to teach her, because she makes these plays a little too quickly without kind of thinking it out. You know, I think there's definitely another way this message could have gotten out. I mean, in 2 months' time, there's a possibility she could have paid them to get me out. Find a ship that'll get you out. Get me out of here. I mean, eventually it seems like everybody's kind of accepted her. Why not? If you're going to make this move, why not escape and go tell her yourself?
Yeah, like she was able to go down there and talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, she was able to go in there and have sex with him and then get gang raped. And nobody stopped any of that. Mm-hmm. So how would somebody be able to stop her in 2 days' time getting on the boat with them and say, this money is for passage. You need to get me to here. Maybe he wouldn't have done it because it would have been too risky and he didn't want to incur King Harold's wrath. I don't know. That's a possibility. But I'm with you guys. I don't know how exactly, but it seems like there could have been a better way for her to get this information to Lagertha.
I mean, you have to assume that they're in the same landmass because he wants to be king of all of Norway. So Kattegat would be encompassed within that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I know waterway would be the fastest way to get there. But I mean, couldn't she just try to like just escape going inland?
Yeah.
It might take her a month, but it still gives her another month. I mean, I don't know that Kattegat doesn't exist. It's actually like a bay or something like that.
Yeah.
And we don't actually know what Crapagat is. So
yeah, how they are distant from each other. Like there's no map that's showing us all this. So
we just have to go to Norway and find the town with the bloodiest puddles and then we'll know it's it.
Yeah.
The biggest whaling town.
The fish blood everywhere.
Yeah,
the whale blubber.
I think she could have escaped if this was her plan because if it gets back to Harold, she's dead. So unless she's staying there to glean more information, then I kind of get it. But why not go like Lagertha's route would have been to start training your own group. So that way you've got, just like she did in that village, that way you've got your own soldiers that are loyal to you and then send one of them away. You know, there's different routes. The slow play would have been smarter here. But I guess she wanted them to have 2 months' time to prepare, which is good. Which is really good that they've got all this time to prepare, but I just feel like she could have been a little safer and smarter, you know, in the long run. I think there could have been anything, you know, like a bird. I don't know. See, there should have been something in play with Lagertha and them to have like a messenger route, like a peasant that has nothing. Here, go on this horse and take care of this. You know, that it's a fishing town and these guys are so loyal to Harold. It was ballsy to go to one of the captains of one of the fishing fleet to do this when there could have been a peasant or somebody who hates Harold. Maybe wait just a little bit and find somebody who really dislikes him that you could send out, or a traveler or a merchant, you know, that's coming through town.
I mean, why didn't Lagertha be more proactive about it? I mean, wouldn't everybody know where Harold's from?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, why didn't she send somebody over there to try to make contact with Astrid just to see what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, create a channel of communication that way.
Well, maybe she did, and she saw her get married and was just like, fuck it. But that doesn't make sense. You would want to know all the details, like, to talk to her. I agree. It would have been smart to send somebody to talk to her.
I think this whole scene with her and everything that happens to her later on is coming down to a setup to where she's going to kill Haken and his whole crew in another episode or two, like when they come back. He's going to come back and try to act like nothing happened and say something, and she's just going to wait until like nightfall or something and go on the boat with a sword and just dice everybody
up. All of them. Yeah. And just say that they were trying to attack her or something.
Yeah.
They were trying to
set the boat on fire.
Mm-hmm.
That way she covers her tracks too.
Now, Lagertha would be smart to kill them there. Or keep them in Kattegat. Like, no, y'all aren't leaving because you can go back and tell them that we're preparing. So now you're staying. You're fighting for us.
I hope
now.
So.
That's a good point. Hopefully she does it. That would be the smart move to do.
Because she does give them places to sleep and eat. So hopefully.
She needs to lock that door. Put a better lock on that than the one that she had on Harold's prison.
Only Floki
can they're
going
to have better security.
So later, Astrid hones her blade, deeply focused. Harold walks past and touches her affectionately. Astrid thinks of Lagertha. Her memory of Lagertha seems to be fading, and this appears to trouble her.
Yeah. So. Not much to say about that, really, except for the nail polish.
Who does your nails?
I mean, are we supposed to like the fading vision of Lagertha? I mean, you just had Harold walk by and touch her affectionately. Is she starting to like Harold or like it? Like the, I mean, is that supposed to be related?
I don't know. It's
because she seemed to be having fun in the woods with him.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're just playing along, it's one thing, but like they actually looked like they were having a good time. So
next, we see Astrid back by the boats. A little boy spots her and finds her presence there suspicious, so he follows her. She meets with Haken in the fish hut. She delivers the treasure. After he inspects the treasure, she gives him the message to pass on to Lagertha. He still wants sex. She asks if he has to, and he says, an agreement is an agreement. The boy watches through slats in the doors, which I think we are meant to think of Sigurd's snake in the eye.
Yeah, watching Harbord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were in a fish hut too.
Goings on.
Astrid reaches for a blade, but decides otherwise. Hakon's crew also wants to have sex with her. She fights, but they overcome her.
So the little boy went to tell him that it was happening, and the crew showed up. Because at first I was like, well, he's going to go tell Harold. And it's all over with. Like, that's the one who's following him.
I didn't realize. So that's what happened?
Yeah, because he leaves and it's like, oh, he's going to go snitch on her to the king. But then all of a sudden those guys show up and it's a whole different story. That's just how I took it.
Yeah, like he was waiting for them to be done.
Mm-hmm. Or something. Or just, hey, she did have sex with him. You guys, you know, kind of like go get the rest of the crew. Because I thought he was going to go tell Harold. I thought that's who's been following her around to keep an eye on her.
Yeah.
But I just took it. How the scene progressed, that's what that little kid's job was.
He's a lookout for the boat crew, I guess. Or maybe they paid him. He's just a little street urchin or something.
One of Varys's many birds.
Yeah.
Birds. I do think, I was thinking he would eventually be the problem for her. She would never kill a little kid, I don't think. So I think maybe she will kill that crew, hopefully. But that kid will be her undoing.
She just killed a kid, too.
I mean,
why not?
It could be just like some sort of parallel to the whole Sigurd snake in the eye and like how things change, yet they stay the same. Like I don't know. If there's nothing that comes of it, which we often have in Vikings.
Yeah, that does happen.
There's got to be some sort of thematic point to it. Or it could be just a plot point and he's going to be involved in Astrid's demise. We do have a hashtag no ship. And Simona says, I really felt sorry for Astrid for being abused by all those men. No women should ever go through that. Is her character going in the Martyr of Kattegat direction? Hashtag no ship, hashtag Vikings. Maybe. So maybe she'll be responsible for saving Kattegat and sacrifice her life for it.
Yeah. It's hard to tell by the way she's been acting, though, you know?
If that doesn't happen, though, that you're also setting up a potential sort of resentment on her part. If, you know, if she's on one of the boats that goes to attack Kattegat, which I don't know if Harold's going to let her be there, but if she does go, then... If, you know, something weird happens between her and Lagertha, if they ever have another scene together and she doesn't feel appreciated, that's going to be sticking in her craw, because she basically had to go through all of that just to get this message mm-hmm. to her so she could save her town. So that could end up being pretty bad too.
It's just it's hard to tell with her how her storyline's going to pan out. I didn't think she was going to turn on Harold. I was surprised when all this went down. It was like, okay, she does care. You know, it's like it's hard to read her. You know, it really is what direction she actually wants to go.
I hated the scene though overall.
It sucks. You know, I don't know if it was really needed, that it was kind of like forced and put in front of us, you know, to a certain extent, mm-hmm. especially even with this season with Lagertha doing it in the prison. You know, it's like maybe it's just to give us some shock value. I don't know. It sucks either way, you know.
I don't know. What's the point of like wanting to sleep with a queen? Because every man wants to sleep with a queen, but unless you're going to talk about it. So it's like should have walked away from that when he said that. Like, no, I'm not dealing with you because mm-hmm. obviously you want to fuck me so you can tell all your buddies down at the Great Hall that you fucked me.
Yeah.
And that's going to let the cat out of the bag. Mm-hmm. What's going on here?
Doing it too quickly, though. But she almost couldn't walk away from it because she just asked him to turn on his king. He threw that in there because I think he knew she kind of had to. Otherwise, he had all that leverage against her. That's why it didn't make sense for her to go that all out so fast. You know, it's like you should have been given it just like a week or two and still given Kattegat a month and a half of preparation, because the guy held that much leverage and he knew it. She couldn't say no because, okay, I'm going to go tell Harold what you just said to me right out the gate. She's
been like, that's his word against mine. I didn't say it.
She should have killed him.
Like,
that's the only way out of it.
Well, she should have.
Right.
She would have had to get him in that fish head at that moment. Mm-hmm. You know,
the first they only meeting
stood on the outside.
Yeah. The first meeting. Well, she's the queen. She could have just been like, oh, they don't. Nobody knew what they were talking about. She could have been like, hey, he fucking attacked me. I'm the queen. And just killed him real quick, even out in the open. Nobody would have batted an eye. I'm the queen, and Harold would have taken her back. The second he tried to put the sexual leverage on it, she should have just killed him and gone a different direction. Because nobody knew anything. There was nothing told. And Harold would have had her back because he's a goon.
Yeah, pretty much. I agree with that, yeah. I can't really add anything to that, but it's, yeah.
He would have believed her.
Yeah.
I think so.
Oh, yeah.
Because that nothing would have been said about Kattegat, because that guy would have been dead.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now we're with Haemond again, and he is put to the test before a vicious Viking crowd. This is so Ivar can decide if Haemond will fight for them or be killed. Ivar pulls out a knife. Haemond asks Ivar to give him the knife. Ivar smiles and hands it to him. Haemond turns it towards his own chest and faces the Viking horde. One wound-up man challenges Haemond to kill himself. He calls Haemond a coward. Instead, Haemond thrusts the knife under and upwards into his mandible. This was Ivar's answer that Haemond will indeed fight for them. We have a hashtag no ship. This one's from Christian Callahan, and he says, after seeing Haemond kill that Viking, I foresee him killing King Harald to protect his new boo, Ivar. Hashtag no ship.
New boo. I love that. New boo, Ivar. I'm interested to see how Bishop Haemond's character is going to develop after this, because he's got obviously different facets. He's got his, somewhat less than pious belief in you know, his religious devotion, we'll say, for lack of a better term. But then he has that bloodlust. So Ivar is letting him focus on one part of that, kill heathens and just let it come out. Mm-hmm. He just gets to be a killing machine, and he still can feel like he's at least ostensibly doing the Lord's work.
Yeah.
So it's going to be cool to see how this changes the character and like who he comes out as on the other side of it.
Well, he's forgetting about his character. You know, this is a pretty charismatic cleric. You know what I mean? This is what's going to hurt him in the long run, because if they give him the chance to run around and get some of that freedom that even Athelstan had, where he's maybe got his own room and he can kind of clean himself up. You know, I said earlier, I really think this is going to come back and bite them in the long run because of the other facets that he's not focusing on. He knows he's a weapon and can do these things, but, you know, we're going to see how much freedom they give him. If they kind of keep him chained up like a rabid dog, I think they'll be all right. But if they let him clean up and kind of get out in the people and learn their language, they're going to be in trouble.
Maybe Ivar will just have him sleep at the foot of his bed.
Oh, fuck. I would not want to sleep in that guy's room. No thanks. Yeah. Crawling around all creepy.
Staring at you in the face while you're trying to sleep.
Yeah. Are you sleeping? Yes. Fuck off.
Christian.
I'm trying to. Yeah. I'm trying.
We're constantly getting threats of crucifixion.
So this ties up Crappagap. All right, so now we're in Kattegat. Floki and his followers prepare to disembark when they are confronted by Lagertha. Floki wonders who betrayed them and quickly susses out Guthrum. Floki asks Lagertha to spare him imprisonment. Lagertha says he deserves to be punished and that she doesn't deserve his betrayal. She confronts others in Floki's company individually. They plead their case. Lagertha allows them to go. She sees no point in keeping them all there, but she hopes that Floki delivers what he has promised. She warns of Floki's trickster's nature. He says that is no longer true of him. She asks him if he thinks that she could really have him killed, while a single tear runs down her cheek. He says, "You've done worse things than that, Lagertha." You can see this wounds her. He touches her face, calling her shield maiden, blessed by the gods. He says, "Farewell." And I think this is the farewell between these two characters.
Probably right. Yeah, because nobody expected those two to see each other again. She even says so. "I never expected to see you again in this life," in the last episode. So I think this is going to be the last time they see each other. And we were kind of talking about who, you know, what he was referring to as, you know, "You've done worse things." And we thought about all the other people that she's killed, but the only one that really makes sense that he would say that about would be Aslaug, because she didn't have to kill her. And those two were kind of in cahoots with each other because he was training her son in the Viking ways at her request. So
shot her in the back too, right?
Yeah. So that would probably equal out to be worse than killing Floki, you know, because he's just the humble boat builder, right?
Yeah.
It's a snap. She got served, you know. But what can you do?
We have a hashtag no ship from Jasmine Nightbloom, and she says, "Hashtag Lagertha really is cracky. She's seeing betrayal everywhere, whether there is any or not. So exploring new lands is considered a direct attack on her. And when did Floki say anything about hers and Ragnar's beliefs? Shaking my head. Hashtag no ship. Hashtag Viking."
Yeah, betrayal is a big theme with her. Like Lagertha is, as the kids say these days, butthurt about a lot of stuff, about a lot of the ways that people have treated her in the past. And, she, you know, she does have a point. She has been betrayed by every man in her life.
It does seem like she's been harping on it more lately.
Yeah,
I imagine Margaret was back there rolling her eyes on her horse.
Oh, like, here we go again. The whole betrayal.
Yeah, well, if she was aged a little bit, it would be a little more believable. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, she's older. She's been through a lot. But when she's looking as good as she does, it's like, well, what is she talking about? She's only like 25, right?
It turns out betrayal is excellent for skin.
Oh,
it just phenomenal. makes you glow. You know, you're just like, oh, look at me.
Betrayal of Olay.
And I see why she gets kind of mad about these warriors leaving, because she knows Harold's out there. Granted, she doesn't know that they're coming right away, but and she knows that if the Ragnar sons survive, you know, in England, they're going to be back also. So losing any warriors at this point, because she's not really gaining any either, is a pretty large blow. But she's a good leader in the fact that, well, if I keep you here, you're going to hate me anyway, and it's going to cause more dissent. So go ahead and go. You know, Lagertha's really trying to hold it together in a better way than any other ruler would be dealing with right now. Everybody else would be a dick about it.
And she hasn't forgotten Earl Haraldson and how he treated Ragnar when Ragnar wanted to go to England. So she doesn't want to rule in the same way. So that experience is what's shaped her as a ruler. So, I mean, I've been concerned about her insecurity with power. But I've actually wondered, and it was really took me hearing what Anud said on the boat on their way to Iceland to go, well, you know, maybe there is some wisdom in what she's doing. But I don't really know yet. But her raping Harold is a sign of weakness. So I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have both things. You're not going to.
Yeah. Nobody's 100% anything. Yeah. So you can hold that kind of contradictory, like cognitive dissonance or whatever, you know, still be somewhat of a good leader and do, because I think this was a good move, because people are going to see that she has that kind of benevolence streak. She cares about the people. She's not going to force them to stay and possibly take arrows, and, you know, when they want to go and make a better life for themselves. So even though it would be better for her to have them stay, she's not going to force them to do it. So she becomes a better ruler by merit of doing that. And then the word of that is going to spread, and it will breed more loyalty toward her, I think.
As Lagertha rides out, Margaret angrily comments to Ube about how Lagertha's choice to let Floki go proves her point about Lagertha's weakened rule. I don't know. I don't remember everything about Margaret. I don't know what her main bone to pick with Lagertha is. It seems to me like her circumstances have been better because of Lagertha. I don't know if I'm forgetting some sort of grievance. Does she fear for her personal safety constantly because she is a former slave? And does she think putting Ube in power would finally assure the security that she desperately needs? What do you guys think?
I think she wants to be queen, flat out. She knows if Lagertha's not there and Bjorn's not around, Ube's going to be king and she'll become queen. So by her kind of like always saying, look, she's terrible. Why don't you? She's kind of like a bad wife or husband that's like trying to push somebody to do something that they really don't want. Because I don't think he really wants it. You know, I think he's okay with his station and is happy. And she just keeps telling him the negative. So he finally snaps and goes, fine, I'm going to become king. You know, like enough already. Because she
better start popping out some babies before Ube does a Ragnar on her.
Yeah, well, she's had, that's the thing. She's had a, like you bring up a good point. She's had a great life because she's been freed. She's, you know, she's always at all the big meetings. She's always involved. She's always looking clean and well-fed, you know. She has freedom. So I really do think that it's just her being a pain in the ass, just always trying to push him to become king. That's the only thing I can think of.
So her wanting to become a queen would be like a sort of jealousy then of Lagertha.
Yeah, I think. You know, like, I should become queen. I'm married to the eldest Ragnarsson, other than Bjorn. Well,
so, you know, because I was talking about jealousy with Ivar and how he's emulating Haemon instead of, like, competing or where, you know, I'm wondering if her resolving her jealousy is flawed because of her gender, because women weren't supposed to compete openly, even though you have somebody like Lagertha who would, but, you know, she's an anomaly.
I feel like she's trying to get
Maybe she was influenced by Aslaug because she watched how Aslaug ruled for a long time.
I was going to bring up Aslaug and say she's trying to get a mile out of her inch here. Mm-hmm. You know, she was a slave. She was taken out of that scenario. She's married to one of the Ragnar sons. She's allowed to stay in Lagertha's court and be well taken care of, like Paul was talking about. But it doesn't seem to be enough for her. She wants more than that.
Yeah,
she wants more than that. You know, and it's
crazy.
I think she thinks like, okay, whatever resentment she has for Lagertha probably comes from the fact that she's thinking that if this woman hadn't killed the mother of her husband, then she would have a more direct path to power and more security. But Lagertha's been very good to her, even considering, you know what I mean? Because that's like, she's only good to these sons for, well, strategic reasons and because they were from Ragnar, and she still carries a torch for Ragnar, and, you know, she knows that they're royalty and the whole nine yards. So
you feel like she would have had a more direct line to power if Aslaug was still alive?
Yeah, because
Aslaug was just like, no, have sex with her, but you still need to find a wife. Like, she would not have had any access to power if Aslaug was still alive.
Yeah, but she doesn't realize that, though. You know what I mean? Like, she
was there she was there at the table when Aslaug said that.
Oh, yeah,
she
was. That's a good point, too. That's right. I don't know. I mean,
okay, yeah, I guess that's wrong, then.
I don't know.
But that's why, I mean, I don't get her. I don't understand her.
Yeah. That was the only way that I could make that work, but that piece of information puts the kibosh on that theory. So, I don't really know, because it just leaves you wondering, like what we're doing. It's a head scratcher. I don't know if it's like kind of a bad writing or what it is. Like, maybe she's there as this archetype thorn in the side of, you know, she's the distillation of all of the doubts that everybody has about Lagertha. She's that. The lurking insecurity behind everything. Because otherwise, you know, if you just look at Margrette as a character, she has no reason to dislike Lagertha. And she's got the same people doing her hair and makeup and cooking her food and doing her nails and all this other stuff. So she should be happy. But, you know, I guess that's just part of the downside of the human condition, is that we're never just content.
Yeah.
And
actually, you know, her hair isn't elaborate, and that might actually be the problem. She might be pissed about that.
She just needs some
all
braids.
About.
Yeah.
It's the hair.
That's what we're going to get next episode. She's going to be like, I just need some braids. Odin, damn it. You know, get me some braids.
Michael Guy has a comment about this in our hashtag no ship, and he says, should have sent her ass with Floki. Hashtag Vikings, hashtag no ship.
That's a good call.
That would have been a great boat ride. She would never shut up.
Now, Floki would have thrown her off.
Yeah, just whoops.
Right when they got, like, right when they pulled out, just, oh, look at that special fish. Kick. She's going to get herself killed, but we'll wait till that happens.
Yeah.
So we have a follow-up with Hakon, the guy that Astrid had asked to send a message, and surprisingly, he does deliver the message to Lagertha. He also tells Lagertha and Ube that Ivar has joined with King Harald. Lagertha asks after Astrid, and Hakon plays humble. Lagertha tasks Ube to lead their army. Ube is bitter about the idea of fighting against his brothers. He believes Ragnar's legacy would be torn apart. Lagertha quotes the seer, saying that their world will be torn apart. Torve and Ube set out to prepare. Lagertha retains Margaret to confront her about Margaret speaking against her. Lagertha threatens to cut out her tongue and re-enslave her. Margaret thinks that Ube would have something to say about this, but Lagertha reminds her it is not Ube who rules Kattegat.
She just doesn't know when to shut up. Mm-mm. That's the problem. It's like she should have already taken the hint that she's not going to be good enough at manipulating Ube to do what she thinks he should be doing. So she needs to chill the fuck out and just enjoy the wine and the good food.
Yes. She just hasn't had much practice at freedom. Maybe that's what it is.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I was hoping when she walks away and she was all confident that Lagertha would just kick her foot and make her trip on her other foot and fall down. Like, ooh, my bad. Accidents happen all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Jasmine Nightbloom says, I've been done with Margaret from the beginning. Even Ube seems done with her. She has progressed from brother-hopping whore to annoying buzzing gnat. Ivar should have killed her when he had the chance. Stop giving her warnings. She just can't take a hint. #NoShip.
I agree. Vikings. She can take a hint.
Yeah, it's kind of harsh, but on the whole, I agree with that. It's an accurate assessment of this situation. And, you know, here's the irony of this situation is that Margaret keeps questioning her competence, her judgment, her ability to follow through. She's going to be the one that she does follow through on.
Yeah.
If she doesn't shut her mouth. So, like, she's going to get to feel the competence and ability and follow through because she's not going to have a tongue and she's going to be a slave.
Maybe she'll blood eagle her.
Oh.
We'll see Lagertha blood eagling somebody.
That would be
being annoying. That'll send a message to everybody. Watch your mouth.
I'm weak, huh? Huh?
It'll be like the equivalent of one of those Taylor Swift songs where she's like talking shit about people all the time. Or is that all of Taylor Swift's songs? I don't know.
Okay. Iceland. So we're leaving Kattegat unless you guys have anything else to say.
No, I covered it.
No.
All right, so to our final parts of this episode, we're back to Floki. Floki's boats, which are including Ayud, Eivind, and Kettle Flatnose, they are discussing Lagertha's decision to let them go. And Ayud says that Lagertha rules like a woman, and her choice to let them go is because she's waiting to see if Floki is right. I really like this conversation, not because I necessarily believe that there's that much of a difference between males and females. I think sometimes we romanticize our differences, even though we do have differences, but I think there's a spectrum. But it did give me more of a positive view about what Lagertha is doing, and I really wanted that. So I was happy to have that little nugget.
Mm-hmm.
She makes a really good point when she talks about the patience, though. That is a difference between, if not necessarily like in a binary sense, like all women are patient and all men are impatient. But when she talks about how when men have power, they have to use it.
Yeah, they want to exercise it.
Exercise it and stuff like that. And Lagertha is exercising patience at this point. So she does bring up a good point, especially when you look back earlier in the episode and you see the scenes between, say, Ivar and Harald, where he's like, it's a full moon tonight. Let's go ahead and do this in 2 moons from now. So which seems like a pretty short amount of time to get everything done. Boats repaired, battles plans ready,
yeah.
Provisions, strategy, all that stuff to get done. So the men are impatient. All this talk of kings and who's going to be king and things like that. So the men do seem to be a little bit more on the impatient, okay, let's get this rolling side, you know, and then the women not so much.
Lagertha just seems about maintenance. You know, she's just trying to maintain.
Yeah.
But let's see here. Floki and company spot Iceland on the horizon. Floki is elated. The same cannot be said for his followers. Do not worry, Ayud. It cannot be as bad as it looks, says Kettle Flatnose. Now trekking their way inland, impatience has set in among Floki's company. It does not appear to be the land of milk and honey, Floki promised. Kettle asks, why go inland? Why not sail around the coast? And Floki says that it has to be hard to get the reward of the land of the, within the land of the gods. And that's all I have for that. So any predictions about, is Floki going to deliver the milk and honey?
Well, he says that they have another couple of days of walking to do, and they're heading inland. And they make a point of pointing that out because one of the Vikings is saying, you know, why don't we, I think it was Kettle. And he's like, why don't we stay here on the shore? Why are we going inland? And he doesn't really answer him. He just kind of says, well, this is going to be super hard and you're going to hate me, but then eventually you'll love me and thank me. So hopefully when they get far enough inland, there's some arable land that they can work with. Otherwise, this was all for nothing, because if they're not having the same near-death hallucinations that Floki was, so the first couple of days he was on the island, what's it all for? They just took a trip.
Well, that's the thing. We just had a conversation earlier. We were talking about like these religious beliefs and these supernatural events and how we don't really know for sure if they actually happened or if they're just something that this one person experienced and believed in. Mm-hmm. Floki's experiences most likely were very subjective.
Yeah.
And I don't remember seeing any arable land when he was there by himself. So he did not see any milk and honey either.
No.
Not literal milk and honey. So is he going to be able to share his hallucinations or was it really supernatural? We'll get actually a definitive answer maybe. Maybe that this conversation will take a different turn.
Or we never see him again. That could be the end of all of them. They just might not go back to him until someone comes back. Who knows? I mean, I thought it was a smart move on Floki's part when he tells him, look, at the beginning, y'all are going to hate me. But then eventually you're going to say this was definitely worth it. So I'm going to be okay with you guys bitching about me for maybe the next 50 years until this is all established.
Yeah.
And then maybe I'll be regarded as somebody who did the right thing. Because luckily, and this is something he should have brought up, we're not going to have to deal with any wars or anybody coming to fight us. We know that's going to happen back there because of everything that's been going on.
Yeah.
At least you're going to be safe farming and building a new civilization.
Yeah, true.
That's something he should have brought up.
Yeah, I think it would have been a little bit of a this isn't so bad. At least you're not going into battle and fighting. You know, you're just going to be building and trying to make this work. You know, because right now it doesn't look so
good. You're just going to struggle to survive every single day.
He's got at least one other Viking that was like, oh, well, where we're from is the same type of land. A bunch of rocks and crap. You know, one Viking did say it was okay.
Well, I guess we should say that not every Norseman's a Viking. So, mm-hmm. You know, the Viking is actually the act of going out a Viking. So some of them just wanted to be farmers and that's what they were. They weren't really Vikings. So that's why that would actually be a great point. Like, you're not going to be expected to act like a warrior when you don't feel like you're cut out to be that.
If he could have given that pitch in Kattegat, then Ube would have gone along with him.
Probably.
You know? He would have been like, farming? What? Somebody say farming? Yes, I'm down.
I think the worst outcome here would be that Floki would be a failure, not only in these people's eyes, but in his own eyes. Mm-hmm. And he would lose his faith and he would be completely devastated.
We already saw that with Paris, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He got set up for a fall by Ragnar. He failed utterly at what he tried to do. He lost faith in himself and then he had a long road back. And he regained it. Mm-hmm. And this is supposed to be the fruit that's born of that. So to have him do that again would just feel like a retread to me.
Yeah, I hope they're successful. I really do. It'd be nice to have maybe not like everything so peachy, but that they actually establish like a town and build off it. You know, like maybe they start a little bit of a trade, which I don't know what they would use for trade.
Yeah.
But there's some nice rocks, you know, send some rocks back.
That obviously eventually does happen.
Yeah.
It's the only country that retains the Norse language close to its original.
So he was successful to some point because people live there now.
Well, the historical Floki ends up leaving Iceland because he hates it.
Oh.
Well, that would fit with ours. He gets bored. This is boring. No, he would be the one to be like, okay, everything's great. Everybody loves me. I'm bored to death. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Fuck this. I'm out.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's one interpretation I read. There's probably other interpretations of the historical Floki. And who knows what Michael Hirst has decided to tell us. It's just everything is just sort of loosely based.
Now, it's all up in the air.
I did find it interesting that on his ship this time was instead of a dragon, it was like a bunch of snakes. It was really cool looking. I remember looking at the ship and like, oh, that's a different take on it. It was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, we saw when he first built that. We actually talked about it because we were wondering about, is it the snakes? Because in relation to Loki, I think Donuts had wrote in about what she thought it was. I think she talked about the world snake possibly to that.
The world serpent.
And there was another association. I don't remember what it was.
Pretty cool.
Just one thing, you know, when Lagertha was asking Kettle Flatnose, like, why does he want to leave? I mean, he should have just spoke up then and said, you guys keep making fun of my nose. I want out.
I want
a new
name.
Yeah. You could have given me a cool nickname. Like,
that's a cool nickname, actually. I like it.
Kettle Big Dude with braids.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been that.
Or just
it had to
Kettle.
Be flat nose.
You know?
Yeah, just Kettle, you know, or Kettle Pot Kettle Black.
Something.
Kettle. I mean, I looked at his nose. I didn't think it was overtly flat or anything like that, but I could see that it was, you know. know, a little different. Well, you know, maybe it got like that in a fight.
Yeah. But considering of all the other cool names that are out there, you know, like call him T-Bone, you know, something.
T-Bone.
Or that one Viking was called Whitehair.
Yeah. Like,
which we have not seen since.
No.
He's supposed to be one of Ivar's bodyguards.
No, we did see him. Yeah, I think it was last episode. It was real quick. Hmm. He just came in and said something to Ivar and then left.
Oh, the messenger. Oh.
Yeah, it was like the messenger.
I thought he had a different name because I think I thought it was him and I think he had
Maybe it wasn't him then.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Feedback.
Feedback.
Who's right. First?
Okay, so first up we have Jessica, Benny Jessica, because we had recorded early last week, so her email came in a little bit late, so we're going to go ahead and read it to start off the feedback section for today. And Jessica says, commenting on the last episode from last week, okay, I'm going to stop complaining about Rags' death, even though to put it like Pretty Woman, it was a big mistake, big, huge, to kill him. And when I'm on the subject of killing people off, I don't understand Sigurd's death. It's not accurate to history. And I heard there was other plans for his character earlier. He was supposed to have had some of Auslaug's abilities to see things and the snake in the eye. Shouldn't that have been an interesting thing to find more about? The wrong brother died again. Scooby-Doo is totally dispensable.
Or his other brother.
Benny Jessica says, speaking of brothers who should have died, where the fuck is Rollo? Is he not going to be seen anymore? That's a good question.
I'm wondering if he's on the boat with Bjorn.
Oh, that'd be great. But you know he's not. He's like, I don't want any of that drama. He's hanging out in his own town.
That would just be weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not going to see Rollo again. He's over.
He came. There's a deleted scene where they tried to pick him up, you know, and he was like, just told him to kick rocks, you know, as they're sailing away. He's like, oh, bye, Felicia.
He's like, I'd like to come, but, you know, my wife said if I go again, I'm in trouble. So yeah. I have to let you go. Because you've met her. She's kind of right. You guys are problems.
Yeah.
See y'all later.
She kind of has a point. You know, the kids are about to go to college. I mean, I kind of need to be here.
You know, my sons are going to want to go with you. It's just a headache.
Benny Jessica says, Floki, the loony little cult leader messing up Kattegat. He killed Athelstan. He is a troublemaker. That's one Viking who needs to die. Enough is enough.
Whoa, settle down with Floki here. This is like, we've forgiven and we've moved on.
You're always so provocative, Benny Jessica.
Yeah, go back and watch some Ragnar Alive. Get your fix and everything will be okay.
She says, Ivar bringing Haemon to Kattegat, a little like Rags and Athelstan. Will Ivar and Haemon be besties in the future? Rags and Athelstan were cute besties, changing BFF bracelets and building sandcastles of Paris together. Ivar and Haemon will be cray-cray besties, trying to top off each other's craziness. Sorry, Haemon, if you didn't kill a kid with an axe when you were in diapers and didn't put an axe in your brother's face, you will lose. The show is all over the place. It's hard for me to keep up. I would like it to narrow down. Ivar is heading back to Kattegat. Bjorn should go home, too. I want to see the big war over Kattegat with Harald, Lagertha, Ivar, and Bjorn. Bjorn is Bjorn Ironside. He will not die in the desert, but Halfdan might. For the first time, a case where the right brother might die. And she says, go home, Bjorn. Go, Harald. I'm rooting for you. It's your turn to shine. Thank you, and happy holidays to all of you, Jess. And a long PS. She says, you silly Americanos, pretending to not know what SAA is. I thought every one of you were at least members of one of the clubs, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, NA, Narcotics Anonymous, or SAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous.
Oh, SAA.
I've seen Californication, and I read your president's tweets.
Oh,
jeez.
That's a huge snap.
We can't argue with this. No. Sorry. Sorry, world.
She says, no, I'm kidding, of course. I have been to the New World, and I love everything in it. I have only met super nice and helpful Americans. Even your supermarkets make me envious. The foods are crazy fun, and you don't have to pack your own bags. I could live at Target. That must be the happiest place on earth. And then she says, Mund is mouth in German. I don't know why. Was Mund said at some point? I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't remember now.
Ich verstehe ein bisschen Deutsch. Sehr ein bisschen.
So, I don't know if Target's the happiest place on earth, but it's close. It's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome.
A lot of people like Target.
Just know that most Americans would rather shop at Target than its competitor. We'll leave that there. It's just a better experience overall.
Yes, depending on who you talk to. If they put an S on Walmart, not the person to talk to.
Yeah.
They don't like Target.
Walmarts? Is that what you're saying? Did somebody
say that? Oh, yeah. It's a very country thing for people to say. Walmarts? We're going to the Walmarts.
I used to add an S for Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble. In fact, well,
see,
I still
that's
say
okay,
it.
But I say Barnes & Noble sometime, too. The S sounds right, but Walmarts, not right. It's country.
I do the Barnes & Nobles thing, too. I think that's just an accident. It's just wrong, but like you don't really know it, and no one really cares. But like when you say Shrimps or Walmarts, it's just bad. Like bad. You
very
know.
Country.
Thank you, Ben and Jessica.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And lay off Floki, all right? You'll like him in this next episode, so or in the one we just covered.
All right. Up next, we have somebody who's going by MLMBMT, and they say, and this is, I guess, a hashtag no ship, but it's written into our Gmail, and they say, just another pet priest, this one on a leash. And that's it.
Yeah.
Just... I can't tell if you're upset about it. It seems like you are, and I'd like to console you. Just hang in there. I think it'll get better.
It's going to be glorious when he's unleashed. Trust me.
Actually, this one's not on a leash, and Athelstan was literally on a leash for
That's
a short
true.
Period of time.
That is true.
When they first got to Viking land.
Yeah, Kattegat. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, just saying. But
then he's... Yeah.
Hmm.
All right, so up next is Undefeated Sam. Sam says, damn, Super Priest is just spraying spit. By the way, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is so good. Mm-hmm. Super Priest is defeated, but still steadfastly holding his own. Strong in his faith against the Vikings is powerful acting. Ivar, when he confines to Super Priest his jealousy of his abilities, yet Ivar is crafty and cunning, his intellect equally as valuable. So I agree with you there. I think I said it in the podcast, though, you know, I think he's using truth as his friend. He doesn't have, you know, when you can manipulate with truth, it's just that much easier. And it's a smart thing to do. Sam goes on to say, I half thought that Lagertha would have archers on the banks of the river as the homie Floki and his flock paddled out. Sure seems to be a disproportion of dudes to women in the flock, though.
Yeah.
We were watching the previous episode at Em's dad's house, and he had mentioned that. And he had said, wow, these women need to be careful. I wouldn't want to be on that, you know, in this group going there. Just
right.
Being like I think there was more women than you think there are, but they just keep focusing on the amount of men. There's definitely more men than women. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I even saw like there was some like families with younger girls, too. And there was younger boys there. So I guess they're just going to, you know, like arranged marriage type.
Make it work.
When it gets time, you know. Yeah. Like we have to grow as a population.
Go breed.
Yeah, go breed. Have fun. He goes on to say, when I showed the wife Daenerys flying out of the clouds on a dragon roasting motherfuckers to ash, and she looked unimpressed. That's the flock right now.
Oh, shit.
They're not. Whoever was unimpressed with Daenerys, you know, on a dragon burning shit up, I guess this is how these people are seeing the island. They're just like, not great. You know, what's going on here?
Where are the trees, Mikey? Where are the trees?
I don't know if you could compare I'd have to be there to see somebody's reaction to seeing Daenerys on a dragon roasting stuff and then have that person go, just shrug their shoulders and be like,
I guess she's seen many dragons.
I guess if it's old hat, if you've watched, you know, maybe you just watched Dragon Slayer. I don't know. But Sam goes on to say, fuckboy actually delivered the message. I'm surprised. Margaret is asking for it. Lagertha can walk up and down her ass. Might want to chill. The hard thing is I'm rooting for everybody, but for Lagertha more so. Too many big-headed male egos running around, and here she is dealing with betrayals and doubts about her. Yeah, she's the one that's stuck with all the real problems of leadership, but everybody else is just kind of like their problems involve who do we decide we want to tell who we want to be king to.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically it. And how soon can other people fix our boats and get our battle preparations done? But Lagertha is here in the trenches doing it. You know, so that's
having
a good point.
To constantly maintain, constantly.
So maybe we should temper our criticisms when they arise of her leadership style because she's dealing with a lot of shit.
Yeah, she can't take her position of power for granted like others.
Yeah, she's juggling a lot of balls where these guys just are holding their balls.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So,
he goes on to say, finally, I have a feeling Magnus is going to reappear. Don't know why I feel that way, but I feel it's going to slide into this and wreck shit.
Maybe Alfred will encounter him on his way to Lindisfarne.
And then we'll have a third bromance going on.
He's dead. And Magnus is dead. Trust me, that kid did not survive. Dead. He fell into that pit looking at Ragnar by accident.
A band of really bad guys found him, and he's been traded for cigarettes a couple of times since
Who knows? I mean, I just didn't see him surviving the winter.
No, not at all. But if he did, you know, then Mary Moon's legacy can live on. That would kind of be cool.
Yeah.
We'll see. Anyway, thank you, Sam.
Yeah, thanks.
Yes, thank you, Sam.
And next time you write in, like, we want a little more information on the wife that was unimpressed with Daenerys and her dragons, because that just doesn't seem like it would happen.
Yeah, what's up with her?
Yeah. Tell us about it. Up next is Dalia General. Salute.
Salute. Swish.
She says, Skull, no shippers. Hope you had a good Yule. Thoughts on the most recent episode. First, the good. Kind of loving the chemistry that Ivar and Harold have on screen together. There's something delicious in all of that menacing and teeth-bearing. You were commenting on Ivar's teeth earlier. How he has a nice
yes, nice I'm a fan. I know Donut sometimes gets tired of seeing his molars, but I love his anteriors, especially number 8, number 9. I love his center front teeth, especially.
For the layperson, they're center front teeth. Yes, they're very nice and white. Secondly, Guthrum for the win. Way to be a double agent. And didn't Torvi look just so proud? Yes, she did.
We called that shit.
Yeah, we called it. I don't feel like it was too much of a secret, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's why they just like dealt with it really quickly.
I'm glad that Floki wasn't too pissed off. He was just kind of like, oh, little Guthrum, you know?
It's almost betrayed. Like he knew all along.
Possibly, yeah. The bad, Margaret. Will someone just shut her up already? Really? I mean, what purpose does she serve? Unless she is the catalyst that causes Uba to finally turn against Lagertha. I wish Lags would cut her damn tongue out. 2. We still haven't seen the rocket-powered boats that allow return from the Middle East and Wessex, or the trip to Iceland to be so speedy.
I know. That's because you're American and you're concerned about these things.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently I'm American. 3. In general, I've been disappointed with this season. It's been mired in war, and it looks like there's more on the horizon. Has little humor, has made Lagertha a villain, has Bjorn mugging and narrowly escaping death, and a sneering Ivar. I feel like Hurst has either lost his luster or his passion for the characters and the story. Mm-hmm. To me, it's no longer the best show on television, and that makes me sad. I'll keep watching in hopes that something will change and reinvigorate the story, and no, another exotic locale is not going to do it. Spend your cash on character development. But wondering what the rest of the No-Ship family thinks. Until we raid again, Dalia General. All right, so Dolly's bringing up the elephant in the room about this season. It started out really strong, and I still feel like it's strong. This season has to prove that this show can go on without Travis Fimmel's portrayal of Ragnar Lothbrok. That's its main objective to me as a viewer, I think. Got to push the story forward. You got to be interesting. You know, you have to have the rest of the show along with it. But that is like the proving point, I think.
Well, I felt like Ivar saying that he wants to eclipse Ragnar also meant like actually in the show itself.
Oh, so it was like a little meta commentary almost?
Yeah.
I mean, do you guys think that's possible?
Yeah, I actually do. I think it could if they do his storyline right after all this war goes down, because that's where he's got to be able to fill pretty big shoes. You know, we got to see a little bit more. I think this episode we saw some more character development in him. Mm-hmm. We got to see a little bit of a not a different side, but just a little bit more of his cunning. I think they could do it if they play it right, and I'm hoping that we're going to get that, because so much has happened so fast this season that this war with Harold and Lagertha might go fairly quick too, and then maybe we'll have a time jump the second half of the season to where we see even a broader view and maybe the fall of the Viking culture.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, the possibilities are really endless. if what direction they want to go. But Ivar, to me, is a huge question mark, because so much of what happens, not just in, you know, Norway, but in England as well, is predicated on the legacy of kings. You know, you father a son, and then that son takes on, you know, your mantle. So you've got the Ragnar sons, you've got Ecgbert's sons, or the Æthelwulf's sons, however you want to look at it, Æthelstan's sons, whatever. And, you know, Ivar's not going to have any kids. So to write him as this character who's not leaving a legacy of blood relation, but rather just a legacy of blood splatter, mm-hmm. for lack of a better way to describe it, is, it's going to take some crafty writing, but I definitely think it can be done.
I think it's imperative in mm-hmm. order for the show to actually reflect the actual historical legacy of Ivar the Boneless, that he would have to eclipse. Like, yeah. Alexander Anderson would have to eclipse Travis Fimmel.
So that means there's going to be some major, like, grand scale battle stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's just battle. I mean, actually, battle, I would think, is the least of it. It would have to be winning us over towards his character, which I was surprised at how appealing he was to me in this episode. So I was like, okay, that's promising. I'm liking how I'm feeling about him right now.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So maybe you could look at the focus kind of being a little bit narrowed down onto Ivar then, and everybody else kind of becomes an ancillary character to a certain extent. But that kind of poses a problem, because you have all of these characters that we've been so invested in for five seasons. Loki, Lagertha, you know.
They're on the way out.
Yeah, they're on the way out. They're going to go eventually, but it's just how, I guess, mm-hmm. how you want to see it. And, you know, Bjorn is coming back, and the seer has said that you will be reunited with your son, but under the most dire of circumstances. Mm-hmm. So this is bad news all around, because for all we know, Bjorn is going to come back and want to take more warriors to go to the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
You know, and
maybe
then,
this could be the dire circumstances he's talking about.
Yeah.
Also, but I don't think it is.
Huh.
I don't think it's going to be this season.
Okay. Hopefully not. You know, I'd like to finish out this season with some of the core characters, and then mm-hmm. just to give us that you know, that push to see. I don't think the show is failing by any stretch. I mean, I have called it the best show on television several seasons running whenever I'm podcasting on it. And I know I got a lot of guff from that from listeners last year, because everybody was watching Game of Thrones concurrently with Vikings. And we didn't actually, Em and I didn't actually watch Game of Thrones until a couple months after Vikings was over. And then once I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, I see what everybody was talking about. Yeah. But like, you know, at some points in seasons, like, you know, 1, 2, and 3, especially, and to some extent season 4, I felt like when I was watching it, it was the best show on television. I don't necessarily feel that now, but I don't, that isn't indicative of it having this huge decline or anything like that. So I don't know, but I do see where you're coming from. So I'm playing devil's advocate on this one.
Well, we're watching a different Viking, you know, without Travis Fimmel.
Yeah.
It's a different show altogether, because we surrounded everything around him and his actions and everything. And now we're kind of, the jumping around is kind of around a lot of core and key people. So it's not as focused on that single person. It's everybody. It's the reactions of, you know, him dying. So I think we're all just kind of dealing with the repercussions of no Ragnar. I've actually really enjoyed this season just because of the differences. You know, it's like every episode, I'm really not sure what I'm going to get. I don't know what's going to happen. And it's kind of nice in the fact that it's a different show. You know, I just feel like it's like season 1 of the new Vikings for me, you know, it's like a whole new Vikings, and that's just my approach. You know, my expectations weren't super high going into it, and I've been, you know, I have my issues, but I've been pleasantly surprised with what we've gotten so far.
Well, you know, like a good analogy would be like a chess analogy. When you know how you play some people, they lose their queen and then their game just falls apart. And they don't know how to use their other pieces in tandem with each other, the bishops, the knights, the rooks, and the pawn structure and so forth. So this is kind of like a show that's lost its queen. So exactly. I just called Travis Fimmel a queen, I guess. But, you know, it's lost its center, you know, the big major player piece. Now we have to have all of the other pieces working together. And I think they're pulling that off quite well.
Yeah, I think so too.
So whatever specific criticisms can be leveled at the show at this point, and there are a few, I think they're going to be able to overcome them with just moving these other pieces in the right way to give the viewer a good story.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think they've already gotten, season 6 is definitely going to happen, and no matter what. and then we'll see from there. You know, it seems like it's becoming, I don't really follow enough television shows to know if going past season six is more on the rare side or more on the, you know, common side of things. I don't know
it's
what
good.
The average.
Six seasons is really good for a TV show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this isn't going to be Supernatural where they're going into, what, season 12 or 11 or something like that.
I doubt it.
Yeah, no. I don't think this show will keep going with that. Like that, but you know, whether that's a good or bad thing remains to be seen.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add because I was going to say something along the lines of what Paul was saying. It's like we're starting a new show. Mm-hmm. So you're having to get to know characters, reinvest yourself in a way. I want to see how it's all going to play out. I feel attached to the show because I think because of the tone and because there are characters that I still love that I met in season one that are still there and they're basically holding my hand through it. And I'm starting to like some of the new characters like Haymond and also Ivar.
And you do want them to progress past certain things like this. I want this battle for Kattegat to be the last one that we see. Because it's kind of like when you watch a Star Wars movie, how many super weapons does the Rebellion need to destroy before we've gotten to the point where we're going, kind of seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
So
why is Kattegat so damn important?
Yeah, why is Kattegat so damn? So whoever is in possession of Kattegat after three or four episodes from now, let's just leave it that way and move on to other stuff. You know, so and I think that's going to be a key to the show's success is giving us a variety in the way that we're telling the tale and the goals and objectives of the character. So hopefully, Dahlia, that answered your question sufficiently.
Good question.
And even though you don't think it's the best show on television, Dahlia, I hope you're it's still up there with, you know, maybe in your top 10 and you continue to watch and continue to listen to our podcast and write in feedback because we like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, so. What she said. All right, so that does it for feedback. So that means that does it for the night. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em.
Till we raid again.
Skull.
Till we raid again.
Skull.
That's a fine sword.
That's a fine sword.
That's a fine sword.
That's a fine sword. That's a fine sword. That's a fine sword. That's a fine sword. That's a fine sword. That's a fine sword.